Hi, you're listening to the My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Serpath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we're going to have a listener's question spectacular, where we do nothing but answer your questions on listener-related topics. But let's find out what we've been up to this week. So David, you've been playing on the weekend, had good weather, any rain?
No, we've been having a rare thing for the UK, which is a heat wave, 30 degree temperatures and lovely sunny weather pretty much all throughout the country. So yeah, we did play. We played a full game on Saturday and we won.
So
we're top of the league.
Convincingly,
again, we were playing the bottom of the league. So we were hoping for a convincing win. And we did get a convincing win. We batted first. We lost some early wickets, but then consolidated and ended up just over 200. I think it was about 208, something like that, declaring with three overs to spare. So we had decided to give ourselves an extra three overs to bowl at the opposition. I was there at the end again, 12 not out, with another lower innings performance. And then we bowled them out for under 100. So
yeah, that's pretty good.
A nice easy win. And for those of you who are regular listeners, great news, first catch of the season. Amazing.
Well done.
Exactly halfway through
the season.
Did it feel good? Yeah, it felt brilliant, yeah. So I'm off the mark in league cricket catches, so hooray. And so I was very pleased with my own performance, and we won by over 100 runs. What have you been up to?
Well, I haven't been to the nets in the past 2 weeks, but I've been trying to work on my batting.
Yeah.
I've had a mate who's the keeper of our team, and he bowls mediums in the nets, and he's always pointing out little errors in my batting. And one thing he keeps repeating is that I keep falling over in my leg side shots. So I decided to go back sort of to my backyard and try and practice my skills. And I noticed that it was my trigger movement that sort of hampered me. So before the ball is bowled, or just as it's about to be bowled, I get my front foot forward and sort of to the offside. So any ball on sort of off stump or outside off, I can play really well. But anything on middle or leg, I get cramped and I get out, or I play a really stupid shot in the air.
Yeah.
So what I've been trying to do is sort of hold my foot back and only play the ball as it comes and only get it out to the line of the ball and not anything outside it. So what do you think, David? What do you think I should be working on or improving?
That's quite a common error, that what you're saying there about putting your foot down the wicket, you know, as a trigger move rather than as a response to the way that the ball is going.
Yeah.
The problem with doing that is, as you say, it completely closes you off to the leg side because your leg is now in the way. You have to move your bat around your leg, and it's all a bit uncomfortable because you can't get to the ball very easily. I mean, you can get away with it if you've got very good timing and a good eye.
Yeah.
But if you're a normal human being like me or you, then you're increasing the chance of missing the ball. So, yeah, I mean, one good thing to do that that I learned to say to people, this is like a sort of psychological trick, really, is some people get very keen. They want to score, and they know that they're good through the offside. They know they can play a cover drive through the offside quite well. So they're looking for that cover drive, and that's why they sort of have that little trigger move. Because they're thinking, if I can get that cover drive off, you know, that's maybe a couple of runs, maybe even a four to me, and I'm away.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a nervous twitch. But if you, instead of thinking about the cover drive, you think in more of, think of the V, think, right, an area between wide, mid on, and extra cover. Thinking the V area rather than thinking I'm going to get my cover drive in. Then you're more conscious about keeping yourself open when you're playing the shot because you've got the on drive in there, you've got the straight drive in there, you've got the off drive in there, and you've got the cover drive in there, front and back foot. So that's quite a nice little trick, because you just think to yourself, as the bowler's running in, you're watching them as they're coming in, and you're watching the ball, but in the back of your mind, in sort of periphery of your mind, you're imagining the lines of the V going out from where you're standing out to the boundary. And if you're thinking like that, then you're thinking keeping your head in the middle of the V, don't go too much across to the offside, because then you cut off all the onside and the straight shots. And of course, if you get one that starts to drift down the leg side, and you're already in a position to play an on drive, then all you do is you just turn your wrists on it, and you can flick it through mid wicket, flick it through square leg, or hit it fine down to fine leg. So suddenly that area where it was between mid off and cover point, suddenly that area has now become extra cover all the way around to fine leg.
Yeah, that's right. So it's leaving yourself open about playing shots all over the park, isn't it? Because as you said, I'm naturally a strong offside player and a weak onside player. So I think my brain's automatically telling me that since you can only play offside shots, well, why don't you get ready to play an offside shot sort of thing? So I think, it's sort of really about training your brain and your muscle memory into not getting that trigger movement out into the offside, but actually preparing yourself to play shots all around the park, and especially in the V, as you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. If you're thinking straight, if you're thinking play straight, play on the on drive, play the off drive, if you're thinking in that area, then the cover drive will take care of itself, and the flick off the legs and the glance off the legs, they take care of themselves as well, because you just instinctively, if you're in the right place and the ball's just drifting down the leg side, and you think, oh, I can't drive this, it's not there to drive, suddenly you feel your wrists naturally going. You'd play a nice little flick down to fine leg. And if it's fine enough, you can beat the man down there and you've got a nice, easy boundary.
All right. Well, as you guys might have noticed, there's no five-question section this week, but we're going to have a listener's questions extravaganza. So fasten your seatbelts. Are you ready for it, David?
Yep, I'm like a cold spring, as always.
Let's do it. Welcome to the question section of the My Cricket Coach Show. Our first question, David's from Heinze, and he says, another term X factor is used to fill in the explanatory gap between those who are ordinary and those who aren't. But I'm just wondering, what's your point of view of this? I think what he's trying to say, David, is he talking about natural ability and training ability into you? Or is X factor something different?
It's hard to say. What do you think? When you think of X factor, what do you think of?
I really think it's natural ability. Because you find those players that do have the natural ability and those players that have had to train to become better. So players like Ishant Sharma, in terms of bowling, who have the natural ability to bowl 140, 150 Ks. But then you find players like Shoaib Akhtar, who's pure muscle bowling 140, 150 Ks. So, yes, that's my opinion. But is X factor something different?
I would say that X factor is the difference between someone you see who's got a bit of talent, or what we call talent, and someone who hasn't got talent. And so the question really is, what is that thing that differentiates the best players from the not so good players? And I think that's probably X factor. But it's interesting to think about what that actually is and what that actually means, because I think what we're naturally inclined to do, certainly in the West, I don't know what it's like in places like India or Pakistan, but certainly in the West, we are naturally inclined to think that you have a sort of innate level of talent that you're born with. And that could be a talent for anything. You know, it could be a good writer or be a good athlete or be good at anything. But I don't think necessarily that's the case. I think people certainly have inclinations to certain things, but I don't think that those inclinations by themselves are enough to say that someone is, you know, a talented person. I think it's a bit more of a combination of lots of factors. Certainly there is a genetic factor in there, and you can't get away from that. You know, some people are just naturally more coordinated. They're naturally, you know, can see a ball in space more quickly than somebody else. They naturally got more mobility and flexibility, so they can stretch and contract their muscles quicker than somebody else. All those things are important, but also all those things can be trained. If you haven't got them, you can learn how to be more coordinated. You can learn how to stretch and contract your muscles more quickly. You can learn how to pick up a ball more quickly from the bowler's hand. You can learn movements, be more efficient with movements. So if you can learn all those things, then what it boils down to is how prepared are you to learn those things? So, and how much access have you got to people who can teach you those things? Because if you sit around watching television all day, then it doesn't matter how talented you are at cricket, you're not going to be a very good cricketer, because you're not going to learn the techniques. And you might walk out onto the field and you might have great hand-eye coordination, but you've not learned how to bat. So, you know, you might hit a couple in the air and then get out because, you know, you're trying to swipe everything across the line, for example. So you have to put the effort in behind what is naturally there as well. But of course, if you're naturally inclined to enjoy hitting a cricket ball, then you're going to want to improve your ability at that, especially if you're better at it than other people. But if you're naturally less inclined to be good at hitting a cricket ball, and you miss it more than you hit it when you're a kid, and you think, oh, this is no fun, I'm not enjoying this, and you give up, and then you stop. But who's to say that if you took two, say, 10-year-olds, and one who had the natural ability and one who didn't have the natural ability, and you gave them both exactly the same elite-level training, who's to say that they wouldn't both be decent players at the end of that elite-level training? I would say even the most, you know, uncoordinated, feeble, terrible person would be massively, massively improved by proper training. It's just they don't get access to that because they don't quite have the, they don't quite have the wherewithal to get that to that level in the first place. And there's a classic example where, they've done a study with footballers, soccer players, and if you're, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but if you're born at a certain time, i.e., you're one of the oldest kids in your academic year, then you're more likely to become a professional footballer. There's a higher percentage chance just on the date that you're based on the date that you're born. So what's the reason for that? Well, the reason for that is that the older kids are usually the bigger kids in their age groups when they're growing up, when they're playing sport. So if you're bigger, you've got a natural advantage. And if you've got a natural advantage, you're more likely to you're more likely to succeed. So, you know, you've got two kids who are 11 years old, one who's just in his age group, one of the youngest in his age group, he's quite small. The other who is only just his age group at the other end, so he's one of the older ones, and he's also developing more quickly. So he's maybe got the body of a 13-year-old boy, and he's that much older. He could be 9, 10 months older than the other kid. Yeah. He can smack it all around, he can bowl much faster, he can, you know, he's more coordinated in the field, all those things. He's the one who gets into the county or the representative level academy, does well in there and carries on there and ends up becoming a professional cricketer. Whereas the other one might have just the same level of talent, but didn't quite have that luck or that opportunity. So opportunity takes a big part of it as well. And then I think the last thing is, well, I think I've probably already mentioned this, is the mental side of it. You know, you've got to have the dedication to want to do it. And for people who it takes a bit more effort to do it, then they need a bit more dedication to do it as well. And that's where it can sort of become a self-defeating thing, because you think, well, I'm trying as hard as I can and I'm still not doing very well. Do I cut my losses and go and do something else instead? And that's what happens to a lot of kids.
All right, our next question from Gareth says that, I was well set on about 40 when the opposition brought on a nippy left-arm seamer bowling over the wicket. I could not get a grip with him at all. I played and missed consistently and edged several past the keeper. I wondered afterwards what I could have done to change the way I was batting. Change guard, change stance, open up or close up, bat further up or down the crease. He didn't get me out, but did cause me a lot of problems. Any advice would be welcome. David, speaking on similar experience, last season I did face a left-arm bowler as well. And I don't know if, no, he's not from Australia, but we don't get many left-armers here in Australia, even though our best bowler is a left-armer at the moment. But I don't see many left-armers coming up anyway. But I did happen to face one, and it was really unusual because I've never faced someone like that before. And I got out to him, and afterwards I was thinking what I could have done, just like Gareth, to help that. And I realized that I got out because I didn't have enough practice against left-arm bowling. Could that be the solution to Gareth as well? Because he's unfamiliar with left-arm bowling, so maybe a bit more practice with left-arm bowling.
Yeah, I mean that is crucial. That is because the main difference between the left and the right armer is there's a quite a dramatic change of angle. The right arm bowler, right arm over bowler, the angle is coming into the right hander. With the left arm bowler, and left-handed batsmen will be very familiar with this because they obviously face this almost all the time with right arm bowlers. The angle is going across you, so if the ball that pitches on off stump is going to miss off stump, whereas the ball that pitches on off stump when you're facing a right-handed batsman, a right-handed bowler, I should say, is it's either going to hit off stump or it's going to hit sort of middle and off or something like that because the angle's coming in. If the ball carries on the straight. So if you're used to that, if you're used to playing balls on off stump, for example, and then suddenly someone makes the ball go across you, then you're not quite sure which one's to play and which one's to leave. So it's quite important, to practice against bowlers who are bowling from that angle. Now, if you haven't got a left armer in your team, then that can be quite difficult. And even if you have got a left armer in your team, he may not want to bowl to you for hours and hours until you get used to it. So, yeah. So you may want to, when you're in the nets, for example, ask all the bowlers to bowl around the wicket, whether they're all the right arm bowlers, I should say, to bowl around the wicket. That's slightly not quite right because obviously the left arm bowler can get a lot closer to the stumps than the right arm bowler can. Right arm bowler bowling around the wicket can, because you've got your body in the way. So what you can do there is you can ask them to get as close as the stumps as they feel comfortable by bowling from the back line instead of bowling from the front line, and then that way they can get a lot closer to the stumps because they bowl from the front line. They find it quite hard to get close to the stumps unless they come in from an angle, and then that could upset their rhythm, and they can bowl a load of rubbish at you, and that's no good. So ask them to get as close to the stumps as they can, bowl around the wicket, and get used to that angle of that ball going across you. So instead of thinking the ball, oh, it's on off stump, I better play it, you think the ball's on off stump, I can leave it. Unless, of course, the left-arm bowler has the ability to swing the ball back into you, and then that is, you're talking about a very good left-arm bowler then who can make one go straight on and one swing back into you as well. But in generally speaking, left-arm bowlers find it quite difficult to swing the ball back into the right-hander, and the ball just goes across you, and that's how they get the wickets caught behind, caught in the slips, with the ball going across you. The other thing you can do is open up your stance a little bit, so you're shoulder and your hips and your feet are all slightly more open, so they're all pointing towards the direction the bowler's bowling from. So the reason for that is that obviously you want the bat to have a direct line to the ball, and if you are standing in your normal stance, if you think of the normal, classics or textbook stance, you're sideways on. Then you haven't you're closed off like we were talking about before. You're a bit closed off. You haven't got access to the ball. Whereas if you just slightly open your feet, slightly open your shoulders, slightly open your hips, then suddenly you've got a room to swing to play your straight drives if you need to play those.
What would you say about throwdowns, David? Throwdowns from that angle to the right-handed batsman.
That can work. If you want to just get used to the angle and you want to get used to the idea of leaving the ball that's pitching on off stump, that can work quite well. A bowling machine is ideal, of course. If you've got access to a bowling machine, you can just set it up in the at the perfect angle and just get someone to feed ball after ball to you from that angle. So
yeah, all right.
That's the ideal, but obviously not everyone's got access to a bowling machine.
Right. Next question is from Lal Yadav from Mumbai, India. He says that he's a right-arm medium pace bowler and he's 19 years old. He weighs 61 kilograms and is 178 centimeters. He asks David if it's fine for fast bowling or should he increase some weight in order to increase his strength and power. What do you think, David? Because this isn't really my area.
This is an interesting question as well. I mean, it depends. It depends how you look at it. Is the short answer. And what I mean by that is what he's saying is that, you know, if I put on weight, will I be a faster bowler? I think that's probably what he's asking. So in terms of health, if you look at it from a BMI, body mass index, which is sort of the indicator of whether someone is a healthy weight or not, that is that is underweight. You know, 61 kilograms is not very heavy for someone of that height. It's about 5'10".
Yeah.
So in terms of health, yeah, you probably want to put on some weight just for health reasons. Although we're not sure how old he is. So it may be that he'll naturally put on weight.
Oh, he says he's 19.
Oh, 19. Sorry, yeah, sorry. He did say he was 19. Yeah. Yeah, if he's 19, you know, he can still put on weight. You can still put on weight in as a teenager going into your 20s. But ideally, you'd probably want to be a little bit heavier than that, purely from a health point of view.
Yeah.
So get some food in you, but get some healthy food in you from that side of things. But in terms of strictly speaking, will being a bigger person make you a faster bowler? No, it won't. Although, obviously, you see people like, as we've said, Shoaib Akhtar, who's a, you know, got big muscles, and you know, a lot of players are, especially fast bowlers, are building themselves up these days. Size is really a byproduct of improved strength and power. If you're working on getting stronger, you'll naturally get bigger. If you're working on getting bigger, then although you will naturally get stronger as well, it won't be in the right way. You know, we talk about this quite a lot, talking about taking a bodybuilder style approach, which is okay if you want to build your body up, but not necessarily the right approach if you want to be a better cricketer or a faster bowler. And for example, one of these sort of buzzwords around fitness at the moment is core stability. Well, the core muscles, the muscles around your stomach, around your hips, you know, the posterior chain, basically your hamstrings and your glute muscles, the lower back, all that area there. A lot of those muscles you can't train directly. You know, doing 100 sit-ups is not going to train your core stability. It's going to train one or two muscles in that area, but there's over 100 muscles in that area, and a lot of them work by reflex only. The nervous system controls them, not your brain. Yeah. So you can't go into the gym and do lots of reps to you know, improve the efficiency of your multifidus muscle. You just can't do it. You have to improve the performance of your nervous system, and that has got nothing to do with muscle size at all. That's just to do with the order that they fire in, the brain controlling the order that the muscles fire in. And you have to teach your brain how to do that properly. You know, we're going back to muscle memory and that kind of thing. You have to teach your brain how to do that properly, and that's what core stability is. So, and we all know the importance of core stability for fast bowling. So, so the direct answer to the question is no. Getting bigger isn't going to make you a better bowler. However, if you improve your strength, you'll increase your muscle size anyway, and as long as you do that within the context of being having a stable core and a mobile body, you know, you work on your flexibility and your mobility at the same time, and you work on your coordination and you know, your ability to move your muscles quickly through space, you know, like a javelin thrower. You know, Ian Pond talks about fast bowling being akin to being a javelin thrower. You know, you have to stretch your muscles a lot and then contract them very, very quickly. That you don't need to have big muscles to be able to do that. You just need to have efficient muscles to be able to do that. So yeah, it does depend, but in this particular case, I would probably say don't focus on getting bigger. Focus on being more efficient. Focus on being mobile. Lots of flexibility. Lots of fast movements. Do some strength work, and eat lots of healthy food, and just watch yourself get into a more healthy weight as a consequence of that, rather than as your ultimate aim.
All right, well, that's it for our questions for today. But David, we have an announcement about Pitch Vision Academy. Something new?
Yeah, we've made quite a few changes to Pitch Vision Academy, to the design of it, and also we've got some exciting new stuff. So if you haven't had a look at Pitch Vision Academy before, then take the chance to have a look at it now. You can find it at pitchvision.com/academy, and it's sort of online training courses, as anyone who's a regular listener will know. It's online training courses to improve your cricket. So what are the changes we made? Well, it looks a lot better now. We've made some very attractive upgrades to the courses, well, to the courses design, and you can sort of search by different types. You can search by batting or fielding or fitness or, you know, whatever you want in that respect. We've of course got the Mike Brearley course live now, but that's completely live now. So again, if you were thinking about improving your cricket captaincy, you've got full access to that course as of now. Gary Palmer's got a new course up, a new batting course up, which is how to bat in 2020 cricket. So if you play any kind of you know, short format cricket, I know over here in the UK we have quite a lot of evening cricket, you know, 20 over cricket played by younger children, or, you know, kids up to about 16. Yeah. And also we have quite a few leagues where they play 16 eight ball overs as well. So anything like that, if you want to learn how to increase your strike rate, then Gary Palmer's 2020 batting course is really exciting, and I've been working on that earlier today, and it's stuff that nobody else talks about, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's stuff that you're never going to find in any coaching book. Well, certainly not in any coaching book that I've ever seen. It covers it from a technical viewpoint, but shows you how you can adapt your technique to quick scoring, but do it as safely as possible. And when you take a risk, you take a calculated risk. So that's really exciting.
Yeah.
We've got a new course for anyone who's a coach out there, or a teacher, or a parent. And it's sort of, it's youth development. It's by a guy in Australia who played a little bit for the Western Warriors, Western Australia, called David Virgo. And he's now all about sort of lifestyle improvement for younger cricketers.
Yeah.
So if you coach younger cricketers, he's got his level one course out, which gives a completely fresh look at how to approach coaching young players, taking it away from the sort of the traditional methods, which aren't necessarily the best, and explaining why they're not the best, and showing you a new way of doing it where you can get the edge. The young players you coach will have the edge over the other players because they're still following the traditional method. So that's a really exciting course. And we've also upgraded Derek Randall's fielding course. We put a whole new load of videos into Derek's course. So if you're already subscribed to Derek's course and you haven't looked at it for a little while, head back over. There's a whole new load of videos in there for you to have a look at of Derek doing some great fielding drills and giving some advice. And if you're thinking about improving your fielding, then Derek's course is the one to get, because he talks about how he was a top fielder for so many years. And in fact, having done the videos myself, I know that he's still a very active person, even though he retired from the game, from the first class game a while ago. So if you haven't given Pitch Vision Academy a chance, go and have a look at it now. There really is something for everyone now. And we've got new stuff coming on stream all the time. You know, we've got new coaches agreeing to do new sections all the time. We've got stuff about spin coming up. So it really is the time to get in now and have a look at it if you haven't already.
Yeah. And of course, Ian Ponce's fast bowling course is still there, right, David?
Of course, yeah. Ian Ponce is one of our most popular courses. And quite rightly so, because it covers in great detail how to improve your bowling speed.
Yeah.
Again, something which the traditional coaching manuals and the traditional way of coaching just doesn't examine in any detail.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, head on over, guys. And if you guys get bored on your iPods, subscribe to the My Cricket Coach Show on iTunes. And you can also follow us on Twitter. And if you guys have any questions or feedback, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for your time. This is Kevin Sampath from Australia signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.